You can tell them in the country, tell them in the town. The miners down in Mingo laid their shovels down. We won't pull another pillow, another ton, or lift another finger till the union we have won. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in our hearts and fire in our soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole.
This is the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild. Our guests today are from Smart Sheet Metal Local 9, Zach Shanks, Ralph Leftham Bull, and Noah Martinez. Welcome to the Labor Exchange.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. You know, when we start these conversations, we like to get to know you. So I want to ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll start with you, Noah.
I'm 26. I'm Colorado native, and I've been doing sheet metal for just about 5 years now.
Great. Ralph, we'll knock it over to you. What got you into the trade? What's your, let us know a little bit about yourself.
So I am going to be 28 this year, and I got into the trade in 2017, introduced by my wife through a pre-apprenticeship through Servicios de la Raza. I was looking for a career. I was tired of having jobs, trying to survive through jobs. And she got me into the pre-apprenticeship, which led to the actual apprenticeship, and I got introduced to John Fleck and Reed Osmus at the time, and they basically gave me the biggest, greatest introduction to the trades I could possibly have, and I gravitated towards sheet metal immediately because, I don't know, it just captured my interest, working with my hands, making things, and like they said at the beginning, you can have a career in this. You can go as far as you need to go or as far as you want to go, so if that's really what you want, we can get you there. And so far in the 5 years that I've been in here, I've excelled pretty predominantly and rapidly. So their words stand true, and I'm providing a great life for my family and my wife and my kids. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. And then I'll go to you, Zach. Where'd you grow up? How'd you get into sheet metal?
Well, I kind of grew up all over the place. I was born in Ohio. Lived in just outside of Chicago for about 10 years, then moved down to Florida. So I've been not a Colorado native like Noah, but so 32, married. I have two sons, 4 and 2. And my first son was actually what led me to get into the trades.
When you say he's what led you to get into the trades, were you looking for a good job because you had a baby on the way, or?
I was getting ready to get married. I had some experience with college, but that just wasn't it for me. Long story short, and I just wanted to find a skill, you know, something that I could support myself and my family, and I kind of stumbled into the trades, and it's one of the best things that happened to me in my adult life, other than having my kids.
Yeah, and what always struck me about sheet metal specifically is that you could build anything. I mean, if you come out, we're out here at their hall, and it's on I-70 right at Pecos. If you drive by here, you'll see, you know, a Millennium Falcon the size of a Volkswagen on top of the building. Do you know the background on that project? Was it like a final project for?
Yeah, that was a final project for the 4th years at the time, and they wanted to build something different because at the time they were only building these round, robust robots, and they wanted to build something cool. And they had a group meeting and they all discussed, well, Star Wars is a big hit. So they all came together with the concept and the idea of making something from Star Wars, whether it's going to be C-3PO or R2-D2, and they settled on the Millennium Falcon and all contributed hours. I mean, it's all handmade from the ground up, from the stand up, and that thing probably weighs, I don't know, 500 pounds. 600 pounds. It's pretty heavy. So it was a beautiful project. It's featured in St. Patrick's Day parades that we have in Denver. So on our float, that gets featured, and it was a beautiful project. So
Yeah, that's great. So when we talked earlier, you mentioned the pre-apprenticeship program. Do you want to talk a little bit about the difference between pre-apprenticeship and then the getting into the program? And we'll keep with you, Ralph.
Okay, so the City and County of Denver, from my understanding, has these grants that go around different organizations. And these organizations can pick up these grants, like the MC3 Step Up program. And when they pick up these grants, they're offered the opportunity to the surrounding community, to the local community, for people with adverse backgrounds and challenging backgrounds or justice impacted backgrounds, the ability to get into apprenticeships, because usually they don't have that. So they introduce you to the pre-apprenticeship program, which takes you in 5 weeks to every trade that they can, five different trades: plumbing, pipe fitting, sheet metal, electric, and glazing. And in those 5 weeks, you get to experience what it's like to be in those trades on a small portion, on a small level. But at the end of them, you get to put in applications, kind of like a direct entry, but not direct entry, to the apprenticeships. So if they really like you and you're really passionate about and that's really what you want to do, then they'll work with you to make sure that you get everything in line to get entry in. So.
All right. Yeah. If someone wants to get into the pre-apprenticeship program, do you know one avenues that they can take?
Yeah, most community organizations like Servicio de la Raza, a big one is going to be Work Now or Second Chance Center. And the Second Chance Center is more towards the incarcerated side of things, to the justice impacted people. But there's quite a few organizations out there that if people don't have the construction experience, they will introduce them to the construction experience. So.
Okay, great. So part of the reason we're having this conversation is that you guys are a group that just, a lot of unions say different things. You all just busted out or turned out or journeyed out. What exactly did you do? We'll go to you, Zach.
Yeah, so I just turned out. All three of us just turned out the beginning of July, and we're all considered journeymen now and sheet metal journeymen. And that was a cool process.
What are the benefits of being a journeyman, Noah?
You don't feel quite as inexperienced for some reason. I mean, same person I was 3 months ago when I was still an apprentice, just feels a little better. And I feel like you get a lot more opportunity to try and succeed and try to excel a lot further.
Noah, just walk me through your career here, learning, you know, what was it like? Did you, you know, what was the portion you spent out in the field and what was the portion you spent, here learning in the facility?
So the way I went about it, I started off as a pre-apprentice, which basically meant material handler, you're the grunt. And after a few months, I got indentured into the program, which that's when you get your first raise initially to a first year apprentice wage. And first year you go twice a week in night classes for about a semester. Then you take a semester off, and when you come back for your second year, you get another raise once you come. It's based off your indenture date when you get your raises, but it's basically once a year, as long as you pass your classes, you get that 10% raise in between the years. So then once you hit second year, you do day classes, which is once every 2 weeks. You would not go to work, you'd go to the school instead, and you would learn whatever the curriculum was for that current year. And then you mostly learn a lot of this trade out in the field rather than in school, but in school provides a lot of important, very important knowledge that's going to make you more successful in the field. And then once you turn out to be a journeyman, you get a 20% raise to the full 100% scale, because all the apprentice wages are based off a percentage of the journeyman scale.
All right, Ralph, I'm going to put you on the spot. You've worked with another union, because I saw it, and that was with Timberland.
Yes.
Clothing, make workwear. They make boots, right, and other workwear. Your heavy duck pants, those kinds of things. And that other union would be SAG-AFTRA, because it was a SAG-AFTRA photo shoot thing. Man, what happened? What happened there? Just tell me about it.
So my experience with Timberland Pro was brought through the union. Applicants were given the chance to apply to this opportunity throughout the whole state of Colorado and five other cities in the country. And from my understanding, we had about 200 applications for the program, And out of those 200, I got selected. So by being selected, we ended up doing 6.5 hours of filming. I mean, full filming, a full camera shoot, food spread out, layout, sound man, makeup, all of it. So 6.5 hours of filming turned into a minute-long commercial. I have a 15-second commercial, a 30-second commercial, and a minute-long commercial, which is the collaboration of all the people around the United States that got involved in that program. So it was a beautiful experience, and I'm definitely a Timbaland pro fan now. I wouldn't say I wouldn't be before, but I didn't really know too much about them prior to this. But now that I know about them and I got to wear their clothes and I've been working in their clothes since, I'm definitely I'm a fan.
Yeah. And what I found interesting about that was we had a representative from SAG-AFTRA send it on to us. Sheila Tracer just happened to mention, but she also put like a little extra note that said, by the way, this is full union scale. It's a really good job. It's one day's work and it'll be quite an opportunity. So what I liked and what I thought Timberland did that I found to be interesting or important to me is that, you know, we often see construction workers used as props in different things, and they always have like squeaky clean clothes and no stickers and no damage to their helmet. And so the official call for that said, you know, like they were looking for real people. And that was just kind of cool that they were trying to reach into the community and get someone. But it's a cool campaign. It really is.
It is. I was definitely feeling the pressure of feeling like, maybe I'm not made for this. Maybe this isn't for me. You know, I don't know if I'm up to this task or whatever the case may be. And then when it came out, in the end, I was like, I am so happy I did that. That was a great experience. Hollywood's not for me, though. So
yeah.
It's a lot of walk backwards, walk forward, turn this way, turn that way.
Yeah, you got to get the coverage. Yeah, that's really great. Want to go back to you, Zach. You have two sons. Do you want them to be sheet metal workers?
I'm gonna leave that decision up to them. I don't know. They got a lot of life ahead of them still, so I'm not gonna push it on them. But it's a great opportunity.
I haven't asked you about your hands, but most folks have some cuts.
Yeah.
I'm all scarred up and cut up, and burned up, sliced up. Like this one was less than a month ago, and almost it was pretty bad.
Yeah, and for our listeners, they're showing off some of the hazards of the job, being you're working with cut metal.
Yeah, and they say it's juggling razor blades.
Yeah, Ralph, speak to safety though. What you know, those are hazards of the job, but what's out there to support safety? What do you think is within that?
The biggest component for safety in this union and our work that we do is we have the ability to stop work. So regardless of whether you're a pre-cub, whether you're like your first year, second year, third year journey person, foreman, you have the right to stop work. If you feel something is truly unsafe, your voice matters. It counts. And as a second year, one time, I stopped work. I stopped two journeymen and one foreman from working on the task because I noticed a piece of our equipment wasn't adequately functioning. And had they gone any further with it, it would have dropped the material we were carrying, which was probably a good 1,000-pound piece of material, unit. So I had the ability, because of the way our safety programs are set up, to say, hey guys, stop, get off your ladders, back up, everybody chill out, let's get this right before we go any further, before somebody gets hurt. And it worked. It mattered. So we keep each other safe. We watch each other's backs. We make sure that everybody knows the protocols involved, whether it's a crane lift, whether it's a delivery, whether it's a small task. You know, you wear your PPE, you stay safe, you know. Of course, there are sharp edges, so that's where the scars come from. But overall, we do keep each other safe.
The reason that your union reached out to us at the radio show was that they felt that you'd built a lot of solidarity within this group and an understanding of maybe the union difference. So I'll go to you, Noah. You know, what do you think is that union difference?
It's a lot closer. It's more of a family than you go to work and you're with your coworkers. I mean, you go through the apprenticeship and all these guys around you, a lot of times through my apprenticeship, apparently they were supposed to shuffle the classes, but it didn't happen ever really until I got to the last year. And you watch these guys go through life, you watch them grow up, you watch them do amazing things. One of our classmates just bought a house, and it's amazing. I was so proud of him. So I just feel like being in the union, having that close aspect, just makes it so much easier to stay motivated at the trade and actually want to keep going.
So, Ralph, what advice would you give that person just starting out?
I would say no dumb questions. Not to not ask, but there are no dumb questions. And that was the biggest piece of advice that I was given. I didn't really take advantage of it at first, but then it took place in my second year. But just ask as many questions as you possibly can, because every day for me has been a learning experience. Every single day, no matter what it is, what project I'm on, what role or task I have, I learn something new. So if you ask those questions, I mean, all the information is there. And the one thing about this union camaraderie and brotherhood is they will share it with you. They will teach you. There's no gatekeeping to say that, oh, I'm not going to show you that because then you're going to take my job. It's like, no, I want you to be as good as me or better than me so that way we can work with together and install these products to the best of our abilities, you know, because the ones who lack are the ones who are, nobody's showing them anything. So if you ask all those questions, the opportunity is going to be there to be shown every single day something new. Little field hacks or tricks or whatever the case may be to make you faster, stronger, more adequate. So yeah, the growth spurts in this union are pretty tremendous.
Yeah,
you can go from wobbly and weak and unable to put a screw in with your drill to carrying full ductwork over your shoulder, you know. It you grow pretty fast. So
yeah, and it does seem to build a confidence that you see when you come into a hall like this or you come into the training center, you know, from those first few folks that are in their first year, first or second year on, like there's a confidence that grows there.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I would say the pre-apprentice programs, like that Ralph was talking about earlier, those are huge. I also went through one of those. It was called STEP. Because I was, when I first started looking into careers, I was looking into being an electrician. And what does an electrician apprenticeship look like? What do I need to do? And the program STEP, they ran a commercial on the local news. My wife saw it. We had TiVo. She paused it. So I watched it when I got home. And long story, so anyways, I end up enrolling. And same thing, it's like a five-week type program where you get to kind of just dip your toe in each trade. And I'm really grateful that I did that. And it was good. It was just a great experience and definitely worthwhile because coming out of it, I knew 100% that sheet metal was what grabbed my interest.
What made you decide sheet metal over the other trades that you had an opportunity to participate in?
Just the people here, it just went with my gut. It felt right. And I just like the creativity aspect of it. Reed likes to say, it's like metal origami, basically.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a good way of putting it, because you can, anything you can imagine, you can build or at least learn to build. So, and you get to work with your hands, and really we're one of the last trades in construction that, you know, builds stuff by hand, you know, builds our ductwork and everything we install by hand.
So there's shop workers and there's field workers. So that person has gone through the apprenticeship or is going through the apprenticeship and is in the shop making that ductwork by hand. So it comes out with that union sticker saying it was built by a sheet metal worker, and then a sheet metal worker delivers it, and then the sheet metal worker receives it, and then the sheet metal worker installs it. So,
yeah, and that, yeah. I mentioned that earlier, but that is one of those things with this trade specifically that I think, you know, you go back, you know, the history of it, you go back to like the tinkerer, the, mm-hmm. you know, the tin person who like kind of itinerant would come around and would make you your teapot and then move to the next town and make another 6 teapots. And that is part of that history that that comes to now.
And the overlap in sheet metal for us on the beautiful aspect of it is electrical, plumbing, and pipe fitting all come in contact with our ductwork. So whether it's a coil for refrigerant, whether it's controls for the electrical side, we come in contact with all that. So we do get training in this union, in this hall, for those aspects. So you get some electrical, you know, I mean, training, you get some plumbing, you get some brazing, you get some refrigerant, and you can choose some of those as your as your elective, and then you can move on to your career and become a service technician. You could become a tab person. You could become a welder. So a CAD person, the computer side of it. So, I mean, it all applies to your life. And that's another beautiful part about sheet metal applies. I didn't realize it at the time, but now it applies to your whole life. Like if you need to fix something at home and it requires a piece of metal, you have no quarrels about, I'm going to go fix that, you know. Or if you're having issues with your furnace and you've been through the service side of it and you have that experience on service, you have that familiarity to be like, let me go check it myself before I get too far into it and somebody, you know, tries to get over on me. So,
yeah, construction in Colorado didn't miss a beat during the COVID pandemic.
And I got overtime.
Yeah. So, yeah, Noah, just want to, yeah, give you some space to talk about your experience in that. What was it working March, April, May 2020 when you're seeing the world act different?
I can say traffic was awesome. But there was just, it was kind of crazy. The mask thing was terrible. You couldn't wear your face, your safety glasses in the ceiling. Couldn't see anything because you're all fogged up. And then the temperature screenings, I remember I was on one job where we had to do 2 or 3 temperature screenings just to start the day. And I understand all the safety aspects, but it did get a little much in my opinion. But as far as steady work, I was doing COVID shutdowns. We were isolating wings with duct work and new machines, just trying to make it so they can have like quarantine areas in entire hospitals. I learned a lot of very, very interesting things as far as about air and negative pressures and how they can isolate 60 rooms in this 300 room hospital and not have it not affect anything else. It was really crazy to learn about all these airflow things.
Ralph, want to get your thoughts on it too. What was it like working, you know, March 2020, April 2020 on?
I did not miss a beat. I was working a minimum of 40, like Noah here. We were cracking off hours everywhere on every project trying to get them done because of the shutdowns and people were, you know, stepping away from their offices and we had more warranty work we can take care of. But at the same time, I thought it was amazing to be classified as an essential worker. I never thought I'd be in that position in my life to be classified as an essential worker in any situation because I thought that was for first responders, police officers, ambulance, firefighters, whatever the case may be. And here we are in sheet metal, Local 9, classified as essential workers. Got the documentation and the paperwork that you're supposed to carry with you in your vehicle in case you get pulled over. And that was a little nerve-wracking, but like you said, the traffic was amazing. You didn't have to worry about anybody on the road.
Very little traffic.
But yeah, we didn't miss a beat. We didn't stop working. We kept going the whole time, so I was blessed and fortunate. While everybody else is, you know, staying home or getting sent home, I was working that whole time. And then also blessed and fortunate due to the safety protocols, I never caught COVID. This whole entire time, I have not caught COVID. So I got quarantined once due to exposure from a coworker, but that wasn't even really exposure. That was just safety protocols. So, you know, I got my COVID leave for 5 days on that. But since COVID started, I have not missed a beat. I have worked Monday through Friday, Saturdays, and sometimes Sundays. So.
Well, and I appreciate you guys taking that challenge and working through it because it was important. Like, you know, I did not know or even think about the fact that sheet metal, you're moving air. Mm-hmm. You guys work in the hospital. I mean, I kept all these things just didn't connect in my own head. I know you work in hospitals all the time. I mean, all of our trades have a lot of work in hospitals, you know. That's one of those places that continues to grow and improve all the time.
And like for me, just going to work every day still, I think just helped me feel normal.
Yeah, definitely the effects of being able to still move around, still function and go to work and interact with your coworkers is a huge component because my daughters and my wife, they went home, you know, they stayed home for a year and a half, homeschooled and homeworked, and it had its effects. You know, they have their PTSD and they have their moments where they stress out and anxiety in society because they haven't been interacting as much, and me, I'm just moving along. So
I want to pull back the conversation a little, and Ralph, I know from some previous stuff that you've done, your background coming from the penitentiary into the trade, and I do want to ask, you know, aspect, how do you make that transition, because so few of our inmates, you know, really truly are able to get out of that situation and stay out of that situation and have, you know, a meaningful trade or thing like that.
The bottom line is, how bad do you want it? That is the bottom line. And that's the main thing I tell people when I do job fairs or orientations at the pre-release programs is how bad do you want it? You have to want it bad enough to say and mean those words that I'm never going back. You know, I'm never going back. I'm going to do whatever it takes to be successful and to, you know, achieve my success. And that's really what it comes down to. Because a lot of people will say, you know, I want to go out there and I want to do something cool. But they really just want to get out on instant gratification. It's like, are you willing to put in the time, the work, and the energy to actually be successful? So how bad do you want it? But it's also a matter of resources. So Work Now, Servicios de la Raza. I was fortunate to have my beautiful wife, my amazing wife, who's just pushing me. You know, she's opening those doors every chance she can get. And she's like, it's up to you to go through them. So it was amazing to have that opportunity to be with a partner who's fully supportive and, you know, pushing me in the right direction to allow me to be successful. But at the end of it all, when it all comes down to it, it's how bad do you want it? And we got to inspire these guys to know that if you want it, you can achieve it. I mean, the unfortunate side effect to incarceration is the cards are stacked against me. The system is against me. It's all designed to send me back. And then I step in there and I'm like, it's not. And they're like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, if you want it bad enough and they see your success, your parole officers, your probation officers, they will see. For me, my parole officer said, you chose a career. You didn't choose a job. You went out there and found a career. Second of all, with the kind of career I got through Local 9 Sheet Metal, I was making above payments. Like, okay, we require your $50 a month for your restitution, court costs, parole fees, and I was making $100 payments because of the money that I'm making in the union. So when they seen that, they're like, you're being successful. You're making all your payments. You worked this whole entire time. Like, they were just really happy with that. You know, you didn't find a job that you can work for a month and get laid off or quit or whatever, like you found a career. So that's a big part of it, letting these guys know that, hey, there's opportunities out there and your background is not going to keep you from success. You know, it's got to be talked about and it's got to be mentioned because that's reality, but it's not going to keep you from success. And it's how bad do you want it, because the opportunity is there. And most people, when I tell them about my background, they're like, whoa, I didn't know that about you. You could never tell. You would never know that. But so,
well, and I didn't know until, like, we had met, I think, a couple times, and then they put on a video of you talking about it. So that was like, I was like, all right, you know. But I know that our movement is about that, and we have folks who go out to prisons like Sterling, and they try to engage with people as they get out so that there's some opportunity there. I think what I heard was determination yourself. You have to have that. And then yeah, the support of a union, your wife, the community, these programs. So Work Now, our Denver Area Labor Federation, mm-hmm. Give a shout out to Madison Castles. If you want to get some info, reach out to us at the station and we'll get you over there.
Dewey Jackson.
I mean, these are people who are there wanting to help people make the best life they can. You know, I also think that what you're talking about too, though, is resources too, is a big point. Being able to pay back, you know, the requirements you have is huge. And in some ways, I see that as what the labor movement or good jobs within these trades does, is when you actually have resources, you have options. You know, mm-hmm. You have a bad day, you can take your wife out to dinner and, yep. You know, that wasn't an option I had back in the day, like when we were struggling. Like, you guys, I'm looking at faces, you guys can't see them on the radio, but, like, you know, that's something real. Like, you don't, there's times you can't pull a release valve and you just have to sit maybe angry at each other because you can't go do something fun. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a story I tell people is when I first got out, everybody has that cliche, well, you want to do everything that you missed out when you first get out. Well, all I wanted to do was eat steak. Well, because of the job that I had and the career that I got involved in, I ate steak for a year straight. Steak tacos, steak burritos, steak nachos, steak with a side of steak, and I can afford it. You know, I can afford it for me and my wife and my kids. So it was beautiful. And then after that year, I got burned out. I'm like, I love steak, but I don't eat it all the time now.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it's been great spending time with you all. I want to thank you for being on the Labor Exchange. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Great. This has been the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild. Our guests today have been Zach Shanks, Ralph Lefthambull, and Noah Martinez, recently turned out at the Smart Sheet Metal Local 9 Apprenticeship Program. Thank you.